You are listening to the Living Hope International Ministries Weekly Bible Teaching Podcast. For more information, visit us online at lhim.org.
What I would like to start with you today, and we're going to continue on for the next few weeks, is on the subject, God is. And we're going to look at theology. Theology is your understanding of God. And there are lots of ways to go about studying theology and developing your own theology, but what we've chosen to do for the next several weeks is to develop what's called a biblical theology, and that means that we're going to go through the Bible and look in somewhat of a systematic way, what does the Bible teach about God? So today we're looking at the subject, God is unique, and that's drawn, of course, from the first sentence of the whole Bible, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. I mean, that is a powerful sentence. And when you think about how God achieved that creation, he did it by speaking, right? He said, let there be light. And then he said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters and let it separate the waters from the waters. And then in verse 9, he says, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place and let the dry land appear. Can you picture that in your mind? You've got all this water and God says, let the dry land appear, and it comes up. That must have been something. And then verse 11, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed and fruit trees bearing fruit. You can just imagine as God speaks these words, trees spring up out of the earth and bushes and grass and all kinds of flowers and fruits and vegetables, that all of this comes out of the earth. And then it goes on, let there be lights. And he talks about how there's a light to separate the day from the night, and let it be for signs and seasons and days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heaven to give light upon the earth. Of course, that's referring to the sun and then the moon and the stars. So what we see in Genesis chapter 1 is that, well, let me put it this way. What we don't see in Genesis chapter 1, and I don't think this would strike any of us as strange, but any ancient person reading this, this would be like really weird. There's no battle. There's no battle. Like, you're not expecting a battle. John's like, what do you mean there's no battle? I'm like, the other ancient creation stories all had battles. They had battles where the gods were fighting with each other, and this one would kill that one, and then out of the carcass, you know, would create the ocean or something. You know, all kinds of weird, what we would call today sci-fi ideas about how our world came to be. But in Genesis 1:1, not only is there no other god mentioned, or any other kind of battle, but there's no even struggle mentioned. It's not like when you go to the gym and try to lift a weight and you're grunting a little bit. There's no grunting in Genesis chapter 1. There's merely speaking. I mean, this God is in a class of his own. So I think that's really our starting place for thinking about this. But instead of really focusing on Genesis chapter 1, because there are other parts of the Bible that talk about creation, I wanted to look at Psalm 104 with you this morning instead, and just work through this psalm together, because this psalm really goes together with Genesis chapter 1. And so many of us are familiar with Genesis chapter 1 already, but we might not be familiar with Psalm 104. So if you could turn there, we'll get to work on this psalm. And I believe this psalm is just really a masterpiece, you know, really worth your time to think about and to read. You know, we're going to read it this morning, but you can even read it later on if you want to meditate on it during the week, because it's just so great about what it says about God. So Psalm 104, verse 1, bless the Lord, O my soul. O Lord, my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty, covering yourself with light as with a garment, stretching out the heavens like a tent. He lays the beams of his chambers on the waters. He makes the clouds his chariot. He rides on the wings of the wind. He makes his messengers winds, his ministers a flaming fire. What this communicates is that God is king. He's robed in light. Think about that for a moment. He's robed in light. He's clothed in light. That's pretty cool. You know, we're clothed in cotton or wool, right? He's clothed in light. He stretched out the sky like a tent over the earth. Think about that. Have you ever set up a tent? Anybody here ever go camping or maybe just set up a tent in their backyard for something? you know, you stretch it out. You know, tents are all bunched up, and they're very efficient in how they're put in that little bag. Some of us can never get it back in the bag. And if you make one little mistake in the folding process or in the, you know, arrangement, it doesn't fit, right? So what we do is we stretch out that tent. And that's what God did with the sky. You know, he just, it's like you putting out a tent. And he dwells on high. He rides on the clouds. He commands the winds and the fire. God is superior to creation. Look at, I've got a couple of verses up here for you. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 12. It says, "Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and marked off the heavens with a span, enclosed the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance?" These are rhetorical questions in this chapter, chapter 40, asking about God. And God, you know, in the hollow of his hand, you know, that's that little part you use to wash your face, right? The hollow of your hand. That he can hold all the waters right there in the hollow of his hand. Or it says that, you know, with a span, he can measure the heavens, right? Just like, yeah, but I can, about that much. I mean, this is a big God. He can measure all of the dust on the earth. And, you know, he takes the mountains and they're just like little clumps in a scale. I mean, it's just really, really awesome. And then Isaiah 48, verse 12, "Listen to me, O Jacob and Israel, whom I called. I am he. I am the first and I am the last. My hand laid the foundation of the earth, and my right hand spread out the heavens. When I call them, they stand forth together." Some awesome verses this morning about how great our God is. Amen? I mean, he's just spreading things out. He's putting it down just like a builder would construct something. God is constructed, or has constructed, our universe. Look at verse 5 there, Psalm 104, verse 5. He set the earth on its foundation so that it should never be moved. You cover it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. At your rebuke, they fled. And at the sound of your thunder, they took flight. The mountains rose, the valleys sank down to the place that you appointed for them. You set a boundary that they may not pass, so that they might not again cover the earth. Isn't that something? God sets these things up. And this reminds me of Genesis, where God says, "Let the dry land appear." You know, at the rebuke of his voice, suddenly the waters ran away. They fled away, and the dry land appeared. There's these mountains and these valleys. And he has in verse 9 there a boundary, right? You see that? You set a boundary that they may not pass. Have any of you ever heard of the Mariana Trench? It's the deepest place in the ocean. It's a very strange place. This is that submergible machine that James Cameron went down in some years back. But it's a crescent-shaped valley in the Pacific Ocean near Guam. It's 1,580 miles long. So it's pretty long, 1,580 miles long, but only about 43 miles wide. So it's just this big crescent-shaped gash at the bottom of the ocean. And the deepest parts of it are 36,000 feet deep, which, just to give you some perspective, that's 7 miles. That's 7 miles straight down before you hit the bottom of the ocean. The ocean's not normally like that. I mean, it's just bizarre. Mount Everest is 29,000 feet tall. The Mariana Trench is 36,000. So you could fit Mount Everest and still have 7,000 more feet to go. If you took Mount Everest out and you put it upside down and you sank it in the ocean, it would fit, plus a mile of extra space, just to make it easy to wiggle in there. You know, I mean, what is this? At the bottom, the water pressure is 1,000 times what our pressure is on the top. 8 tons per square inch. So you have like a little piece of paper, just cut out like an inch, and you have that paper on the bottom of the Mariana Trench. It feels 8 tons worth of pressure. Just that one little 1 inch by 1 inch object. That's the same as 50 jumbo jets piled on you. That's what it feels like. That's why nobody goes without a machine like this, right? And only a couple have gone, really. So what do you think about the God who made that? I mean, it's just unbelievable. oh, this would be good. Wait till they find this one, right? I think God probably did that a little bit here and there. He's like, all right, let's make this one animal here. It'll take them a while to find this one. Because there are animals at the bottom of that. There are these weird creatures and animals, and you know, they're small and they're adapted for that circumstance, but they're there. And God put in us this interesting desire to go find stuff, right? And to catalog it and to classify it and to study it, right? Where does that come from? That came from God putting that in us. That's one of the good things that God put in us, from the image of God, not one of the fallen things that we inherited later on. So it wasn't until 1875, thousands of years, nobody ever knew about it. 1875, there's this ship called the Challenger, and it's cruising along, and it's like, oh, it seems pretty deep here. And they lowered a weighted rope, and it just kept going and going and going. And they finally reached, you know, I think the end of their rope, and they're like, we need more rope. this is a deep trench. You know, but I mean, look back at that verse 7 there. At your rebuke they fled, this is talking about the waters, and the sound of your thunder they took to flight. The mountains rose, the valleys sank down to the place that you appointed for them. And so when we think of valleys, we think of valleys on earth, right? Not necessarily under the water, but we have valleys in both places, don't we? And there are little mountains under the water, and there are mountains on the earth as well. Another verse about this I always think of is Job 38. This is just that epic time where God says to Job, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? You know, Job's a little upset, and understandably so. I mean, he had some serious suffering. But God says to Job, just one question, Job. Before I explain to you the infinite complexity of running the universe in all its relativity and quantum mechanics and, you know, the ripple effects of every little thing that everyone does, just before I explain all that to you in simple English, Hebrew, whatever, I just have one question for you, Job. Where were you when I made it? Were you like standing over there by Pluto? Is that where you were when I made the earth? Or where were you, Job? I love that. Verse 4, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Every builder has measurements, right? And they figure out how big something's going to be, how it's going to fit together, right? You know, the planets are a certain size. Do you know that without Jupiter, we'd be getting hit by asteroids all the time? It's like a big vacuum. You know, that planet's just so big, the gravitational field is so strong, that it just sucks all the stuff into it that would hit other planets. You know, that's just like one of those measurements. Job, did you figure out Jupiter? Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched a line upon it? Verse 6, on what were its bases sunk, or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out of the womb? When I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band and prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far you shall come and no farther, and here shall your proud waves be stayed. That's what God did. You know, that if you ever sit in an ocean for a while, what you see is those waves coming in. They just keep coming in. They keep coming in. But there's a boundary there. I know there are hurricanes and floods, but guess what? After that, they go back to their boundary, don't they? You know, God set these different things up, and I would say he deserves the credit for that. He deserves the credit for the incredibly stable world we live in. Verse 10 says, you make springs gush forth in the valleys. They flow between the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. Beside them, the birds of the heavens dwell. They sing among the branches. From your lofty abode, you water the mountains. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of your work. It's just beautiful. I mean, this right here, we're getting into the interdependence of not just water, but how that affects the different animals. And we've got wild donkeys in verse 11. That's interesting. And then you've got these little birdies, and they're singing their songs in verse 12. Right, so now we're getting to more of creation. God provides for all these wild animals. You know, he programs their little pea brains to go and search and find stuff. I mean, do you ever think about squirrels? You ever think about squirrels in the winter? I mean, these things are unbelievably prolific, aren't they? We have squirrels everywhere. Everywhere. In upstate New York, where, I mean, for us to be outside for 10 minutes in February, I mean, you know the days I'm talking about where you open the door and it's like you just got slapped in the face with the cold. And then instantly, just breathing in through your nose, you feel all your little nose hairs freeze. And you're just like, oh. And then you run to the car. Maybe you have one of those remote car starters, right? And then you run to the car and you get in. You're like, oh, man. And then, you know, we go from little warm place to little warm place in the winter, don't we? And unless you're Frank, and then you go out and you plow all night. And bless your heart. We need Frank. But what if you're a squirrel? How much body fat do they even really have? I don't know. I'm not asking because I know. I'm just genuinely confused how they survive year after year, day after day, minus 10 degrees. Come spring, there they are, all the squirrels. They're up in the trees, right? And, you know, we make it hard for them too, because I have an oak tree. My dad has an oak tree. His oak tree has a lot of acorns. And what do we do with those acorns? We rake them up. Because if we don't rake up those acorns, our lawns are going to be ruined, right? So we're out there raking, and all the squirrels are like, no! We take away their acorns, right? And yet they're still there. I mean, it's just incredible when you think of the ecosystem and how things are set up. These springs and rivers, and I don't know much about wild donkeys, but I'm sure they're impressive, right? I'm sure they're impressive. And then I just love verse 12. Beside them, the birds of the heavens dwell. They sing among the branches. Just a little detail there, a flourish. God has an active role in sustaining creation. Look, it's impressive to make something, to make anything, really. You know, I mean, if you do a good job at it, you can make something. It's impressive, right? But then to maintain it is another story, right? Think of your car. You know, somebody made that car, whatever company, whatever factory, whatever workers and robots and whatever else put that thing together. They made that. But it's your job to maintain it. And guess what? If you don't maintain that car, it doesn't work anymore. It'll break down. And then if you don't pay somebody to fix that car, it doesn't work anymore, right? So think about our creation. Yes, God created it. But he also sustains it. He maintains it. He keeps it all going. And that's an active role. Think about the hydrologic cycle, how God just invented water filtration and dispersion, you know, just using this thing we call evaporation, which I still have no idea how it works at all. You know, I just know that if you put water, you know, you spill a little water and you don't clean it up, come back later, it's gone. It's like, where'd it go? Water's heavier than air. Come on. That's weird that it floats away, right? But it floats away, and that's just one of the things that God set up and engineered in place. Psalm 147 verse 8 says, God covers the heavens with clouds. He prepares rain for the earth. He makes grass grow on the hills. He gives to the beasts their food and to the young ravens that cry. You know, he's got things set up, and he's making it rain. In Amos chapter 9, verse 5, it says, the Lord God of hosts, he who touches the earth and it melts. Whoa. And all who dwell in it mourn, and all of it rises like the Nile and sinks again like the Nile of Egypt, who builds his upper chambers in the heavens and founds his vault upon the earth, who calls for the waters of the sea and pours them upon the surface of the earth. The Lord, or Yahweh, is his name. So God takes credit for the rain. You know, that's his idea. He invented rain. Before God invented rain, there was no rain. It didn't exist. And then he did, and now we have rain. And then let's look at the next one, verse 14 there. You cause the grass to grow for the livestock and plants for man to cultivate. that he may bring forth food from the earth and wine to gladden the heart of man, oil to make his face shine and bread to strengthen man's heart. The trees of the Lord are watered abundantly, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. And them the birds build their nests. The stork has her home in the fir trees. The high mountains are for the wild goats. The rocks are a refuge for the rock badgers. So this is just talking about how the whole system works, how we set it up, right? Verse 14, he caused the grass to grow. Why is he doing that? So you can eat burgers, right? He has the grass to grow so that the livestock can eat the grass. And guess who eats the livestock? You do. I mean, not all of you, but most of us do. Verse 15, and wine to gladden the heart of man, oil to make his face shine, and bread to strengthen man's heart. I mean, just think about how the whole thing is set up, all the different pieces, and how God has it all interconnected. The word ecosystem is a community of living organisms in conjunction with the non-living components of their environment, interacting as a system. That's what we're talking about. God has set up this macro ecosystem, just the whole earth, okay? But then there are smaller ecosystems where, you know, things, whether living or non-living, you know, they have this relationship with each other for survival. And, you know, how do you think humans are doing in the various ecosystems around the world? How do you think we're doing? You think we're surviving? Last time I checked, population is just up and up and up every year, right? Seems like the world, it's almost like somebody made the world for humans to grow and thrive. It's almost like that, right? I mean, what number are we at now? How many people do we have? Does anybody know? 7 billion? 7 billion? You know, when I was a kid, it was 4 billion. Right? I mean, now we're at 7 billion. What? 8 billion? I don't even know where we're at. I mean, it's like every time I look, it's changed. And it seems like our world is sort of like, I don't know, suited for humans to grow and expand. And then we cause problems if we damage the environment too much, right? So we have to put boundaries on ourselves. But it's really cool to think about the interconnectedness of it all. And then how the animals do things. He talks about wild goats. You know, like, because even if you go to Israel, they don't have big mountains. They have small mountains, what we would call hills. But they look like mountains, but they're just short. And then you get more to the north, and they do have a real mountain up there. And it's called Mount Hermon. And that's where Pee-wee came from. No, just kidding. Just kidding. All right, so Mount Hermon is there, and there are other tall mountains, of course, in that general region. But there's a certain place on a mountain, if the mountain's tall enough, where things thin out. You know, like trees thin out, and you know, a lot of mountains have just rocks on the top of them. And that's where you find the wild goats, and that's where you find the rock badgers. You know, and why does the rock badger, which is just like, I don't know, a big squirrel, you know, like why is it up there? What's it doing up there? I don't know. It's just living, man. You know, and it hides in the little cracks of the rocks, and it hangs out on cliffs, and you know, they jump around and they do whatever rock badgers do. It's something. Verse 19. He made the moon to mark the seasons. The sun knows its time for setting. You make darkness and it is night, when all the beasts of the forest creep about. The young lions roar for their prey, seeking their food from God. When the sun rises, they steal away and lie down in their dens. Man goes out to his work and to his labor until evening. Isn't that something, how everything is just so coordinated? I mean, we are in our time, we are so separated, many of us, from nature, from creation, from wild animals, right? I live in a neighborhood. If there's a wild animal, like a coyote or something other than a squirrel, guess what? The Facebook group is lit up. Oh, we saw a coyote on this road over here at this time. And then you got the other one and everybody's around. I saw that coyote too. You know, and it's just like the biggest news of the day in the hood, because everyone saw a coyote. You know, that's like a big deal. But, you know, just imagine for a moment that you're living in a cabin in the woods. If you're living in a cabin in the woods, guess what? It gets dark out, you go to bed. you go to bed or you stay inside because that's the time for the animals. And they're creeping around and they're doing whatever they're doing and you don't want to get in their way, right? I don't care if you have a headlamp on. You don't want to get in their way because you don't know what's out there. And then the sun rises and, you know, you come out of your cabin. You're like, oh, yeah, it's nice out here. All the animals are gone. Where'd they all go? I don't know. But they're, you know, they're hiding during the... It's just interesting how the whole thing is set up like that, huh? I'd rather be walking around in the day than at night. What about you? I'm glad he gave us the day. And then you think about the sun and the moon. The ancients used the moon to figure out months. It was called a lunar calendar. And, you know, it's not exact, right? It's a few days off. I think it's about 5 days off every year. So over time, every so many years, they'd have to add an extra month into their calendar to recalibrate it. But it's a great rule of thumb. You know, let's say you don't have any clocks. You don't have a phone in your pocket. You don't have a watch. They haven't been invented yet, right? And we're talking about the month, and maybe everyone's not keeping track of it because it's not really a literate society. Only specialists would be able to read and write. So how do you keep track of it? How do you know where you're at in the month? Well, you go outside at night, and you look up. You're like, oh, the moon is so big. That's where I'm at in the month. You know, it's just sort of like a cheat on where you are in the month. And then, of course, the sun. We all know about the sun rising and setting. And these two provide the rhythm of the day and night sequence, right? It could just be a long day. I bet there are planets out there that don't rotate. And, you know, just one side's hot, one side's cold. There didn't have to be a day and a night. There didn't have to be a moon that just, like, lit it up at night just the right amount. You know, it didn't have to all be... Like, he made that. He's like, I think this will work for them. I think this will work, you know, because you... And then sleep. He invented sleep. The scientists, they don't even know what sleep is for still. You know, they've made some progress on that. I think it's something to do with your brain and you know, storing memories and washing away bad stuff. I don't know. I'm just making that up. But, you know, they're... The scientists, you know, they're confused by, they're like, do we really need sleep? And then you can keep somebody up so many days and then eventually they die. So that's no good. We do need sleep, right? But most of us sleep every night, right? Sleep is a pretty cool thing. Don't you hate it when you have a bad day and you know, it maybe something bad happens and it just makes your life miserable, and then, you know, you get to the end of the day and you go to sleep, and then the next morning you wake up and you're just like, it's a new day. Imagine if there weren't days. They would just be all the same. That would be terrible. I like having a new day every day. What about you? I guess there are some places where they don't have that, right? Like up in Alaska in the summertime, it's all just one day. And then in the winter, it's all just one night. You know, most places we have the day and the night. And this provides a rhythm for our lives. And, you know, I talked about the partition between the animals and the humans. And let's look at the next verse there. Verse 24. O Lord. So now having looked at all of these different aspects of creation, looked at the sun and the moon and the mountains and, you know, the ocean. And they only knew, like, probably 1% of what, you know, scientists and explorers have figured out by our time, right? How much more should we say these words? O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. Even at the Mariana Trench, at the bottom, there's little bacteria just kind of like sucking the chemicals out of this like heat vent. How manifold are your works. The earth is full of your creatures. Here is the sea, verse 25, great and wide, which teems with creatures, innumerable living things, both small and great. There go the ships and Leviathan, which you formed to play in it. These all look to you to give them their food in due season. When you give it to them, they gather it up. When you open your hand, they are filled with good things. When you hide your face, they are dismayed. When you take away their breath, they die and return to their dust. When you send forth your spirit, they are created and you renew the face of the ground. I mean, God could just take away breath. He could just turn off the oxygen, you know? And guess what? How long would you last? How long would you last? What do you think, a minute? How long can you hold your breath? I mean, some people who really train, they can get up to 5-10 minutes. If you're just like, that's all you do, is that's your goal. I've heard of people holding their breath 15, maybe even 20 minutes. Yeah. Some people have, you know, really trained and their body slows down and they're just, you know, everything is optimized to not die while not breathing. But you know what? Even those guys at 21 minutes, they're done. Right? So we are really dependent on air and, you know, God supplying things. I was thinking about this Leviathan. There's a comment about this creature in Job 41. It's a little difficult to figure out what it's talking about, but it says, can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook or press down his tongue with a cord? Can you put a rope in his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many pleas to you? Will he speak to you soft words? You know, this Leviathan is like a sea monster. No, it's not going to speak to you in soft words. It's going to eat you. Verse 4, will he make a covenant with you to take him for your servant forever? Will you play with him as with a bird, or will you put him on a leash for your girls? No, you won't, because you're a puny human. And God made that thing, whatever this is referring to, he made it just like, you know, a kid has a rubber ducky in a bathtub. He's just like, oh, this will be fun. You know, and the sea's a big enough place to hold a big thing. It reminds me of a great white shark. Not that that's a Leviathan necessarily, but, you know, it's our monster, our sea monster that we think of. 15 to 20 feet long, 5,000 pounds. You know, why is there a great white shark? I don't know. God just wanted there to be one, so there is one. Swims 15 miles an hour, can breach the water. It's just got 300 serrated teeth. Yeah, no big deal. But to God, this is a plaything. This is like, oh, look how cute he is. Right? Just as an analogy, whatever Leviathan is, it's a terrifying sea monster like the great white shark. God's just like, I'll put that there just for fun. Look at verse 27 again. These all look to you to give them their food in due season. When you give it to them, they gather it up. When you open your hand, they are filled with good things. There's God over there. He's got his hand out in the water. He's like, here, great white, have some food. You know, you do that at a zoo. You let the animal eat out of the palm of your hand. When you hide your face, they are dismayed. Verse 29, when you take away their breath, they die and return to their dust. When you send forth your spirit, they are created and you renew the face of the ground. We all depend on God. Verse 31, may the glory of the Lord endure forever. May the Lord rejoice in his works, who looks on the earth and it trembles, who touches the mountains and they smoke. I will sing to the Lord as long as I live. I will sing praise to my God while I have being. May my meditation be pleasing to him, for I rejoice in the Lord. Let sinners be consumed from the earth, and let the wicked be no more. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Praise the Lord. Let's go to Isaiah. Go ahead and flip over there. Isaiah chapter 40. Our God is unique. He is in a class of his own. You cannot compare him to other beings. You can't compare him to humans. You can't even compare him to something as terrifying as a great white shark. That's like a puppy to him. He's in a class of his own. He's unique. Why is he unique? He's unique because he's the creator and the sustainer. He is the one who keeps it all going year after year after year. You think of the greatest objects in creation. You've got the sun. You've got the moon, the mountains, powerful seas. You know, if you've ever been in a storm at sea, it's terrifying. If you've ever been in a hurricane, it's terrifying, right? None of this is in God's class. You just can't compare God to these different things. Isaiah 40, verse 18, to whom then will you liken God, or what likeness compare with him? An idol? Verse 19, an idol? A craftsman casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and casts for it silver chains. He who is too impoverished for an offering chooses wood that will not rot. He seeks out a skillful craftsman to set up an idol that will not move. Do you not know? Do you not hear? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to dwell in, who brings princes to nothing and makes the rulers of the earth as emptiness. Our God is awesome. Our God is above it all. He is supreme. He is transcendent. He is other. I mean, we have a lot of similarities to God because we are made in His image, but yet there are a lot of differences too. You can't understand two people talking to you at the same time. You can almost get there. The human brain's bandwidth is like 1.6. It can't quite handle two at once. That's our limitation. How many people are praying to God at any given second? You can handle 1.6. Maybe you're really practiced. Maybe you can do like 1.8, okay? What happens when a third person starts talking? You lose it all, right? You're just like, ah, I don't know. How many billion people we got? A lot of people pray. A lot of people pray all over the world. And, you know, it's God's business to know all their prayers. And it's God's business to figure out what to do about them. And how that's going to affect the other 8 billion people. And, you know, the 20 billion we're going to have in 3 years when we get there or whatever. You know, like, He's the one that's got to fix. Like, He's just not in our class. Right? He's not just a really smart, really strong person. He's not like a human, but in some ways we are like him in the sense that we're made in his image. Let's read on verse 23 or verse 24. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown, scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth when he blows on them and they wither and the tempest carries them off like stubble. Right? Sometimes people, you know, we make these great structures. You know, we make bridges and we make skyscrapers and we build dams and levees. And we build an international space station, right? And yet all of it requires maintenance. All of it. You just wait long enough, and guess what? That space station, the orbit will decay, and it's going to crash. And it's going to burn. And if you don't regularly keep up your bridges, you know, we just replaced the Tappan Zee Bridge in New York City, right? However long it was there, they're just like, well, I guess we got to build a new one. Right? All our stuff is like that. Even our really fancy steel welded stuff, you know, it still only lasts so long. And yet God can just, and it blows over. Just like you blowing on a dandelion. Just, verse 24 again. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely are they sown, scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth, and he blows on them, and they wither. And the tempest carries them off like stubble. Verse 25. To whom then will you compare me that I should be like him, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see. Who created these? He who brings out their host by number, calling them all by name, by the greatness of his might, and because he is strong in power, not one is missing. It's like the song we sang. He created the stars and he knows them all by name. Right? God knows his creation. He's intimately aware of all the different aspects of creation, all the stuff that we haven't even discovered yet. And, you know, of course, science is just the nature of it. It's always changing. It's always changing. So it's you know, we think we know one thing one day, and then the next day they decide, well, actually, Pluto's not a planet. And it's not Roy G. Biv. It's Roy G. Biv. You know, and we just eliminate indigo from the rainbow. Like, how do you do that? You just... One day they said, you know what, I think Charlie over there, who came up with the indigo back in, you know, the 50s or whatever, I think Charlie had a color blindness issue. I think it goes right from blue to violet. I don't know. I got a color blindness issue, so I'm not going to weigh in on it. But my point is, like, that's all changing as we come to a understanding of things. But yet God is behind it all. I want to close on Deuteronomy 6, 4, and 5. This is the creed of Israel, the creed of Jesus. They asked Jesus, what's the first and great thing, great commandment? And this is what he said. So I'd like to close here. And hopefully by looking and thinking deeply about creation through Psalm 104, you'll be able to appreciate this even more. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The word Lord there is God's name, Yahweh. So I'll read it that way. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh our God, Yahweh is one. You shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And so this creed, this statement right here, is that God is one. He's in a class of his own. There's not like brothers, and they're just like, hey, what do you think we should do? Oh, I don't know. Well, what do you think we should do? And no, it's not like that. I mean, there were others there. During creation, it says the sons of God sang for glory as he was creating it. But he is one. That's why we say he instead of they. If it were more than one, we would say they. That's just the rules of language. He is one. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. In light of all of his creation, in light of all of the rock badgers and wild donkeys and goats and little bacteria at the bottom of the ocean, in light of all of that, what does he really want? It's not just like for us to be impressed. Be like, oh, wow, they're so impressed with my skill. No, he wants you to love him. Out of all of it, what does he really want? He wants all your heart, all your soul, all your might. He wants you. He wants to be in relationship with you. So as we continue through this series, we're going to look at different aspects of God. We're going to see how Exodus talks about him as being a God of great power, and how Leviticus talks about how he's a God of holiness, and how Deuteronomy tells us that God is a God of justice. Right? And we're going to make our way through, and the prophets show us that God is a God of compassion. And we're going to build up an understanding of God that is not based on movies, your imagination, or what somebody else told you. We want to build it on what God tells us about himself, rather than, you know, hearsay or something else. So let's pray. Father in heaven, we thank you so much for what you've revealed to us about your nature and your creation. We praise you for the birds, for the squirrels, for the blue skies, for the seasons, for the leaves that change colors, and all of the different aspects of life that we can enjoy, for just setting it all up to be functional, that we can live and we can survive and we can flourish. We ask you to help us to engage with you with our whole heart, to connect to you with our whole soul and with all of our strength and might, that we wouldn't hold back, but that we would recognize you not only as creator, but also the one who loves us and who wants to be loved by us. We pray that this morning in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Visit us at lhim.org and subscribe to receive email updates so you won't miss out on new teachings, classes, and events. See you next week.